This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast.
Distant memory, but it feels like it's been a long time.
Yeah. It's weirdly only been a month and a half, but it's been a very busy month and a half. So it does feel like eons ago.
Yeah.
How was the trip back?
Do you know, it was pretty good. But every time we left the hotel, I didn't sleep until I got into my bed in Ireland.
Oh,
so whatever the travel time that was, I don't even know how many hours that was of travel time, you know, to the airport, dropped off the hire car, it got on our plane, couple of movies on the flight, eating, you know, terrible plain food, had a couple of glasses of plain wine, and got a taxi then back home and got into Dublin, and then just, yeah, hit the hay. It was probably about, I'm going to say 5, 6 a.m. when I got home here at my time. So it was a real blur. I have no idea how long I even spent traveling, but it didn't feel like a long time because it was just constant, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the flight itself is like 5 to 7 hours, right?
It was about 7 hours, yeah, on the plane.
And you couldn't sleep?
Couldn't sleep, no.
Well, I mean, were all the other lads conked out?
We were all spread out. We weren't all sitting beside each other.
Okay.
But Paddy was two rows in front of me, so I could see him eat the, you know, the ring on the neck on and head back. And he was like that the whole flight. You had a big drive, did you? You had to drive...
Yeah, but for us, I mean, it's like 6.5 hours with zero stopping at about 100 kilometers an hour.
Okay.
But, you know, our speed varies and we stop a couple times. So it usually takes somewhere between 7 and 8. The three of us are just, you know, in the car, chatting, having a good time. A often puts in headphones, watches cartoons, plays video games, or he'll fall asleep. Todd and I just kind of chat and have a good time. So it's not, I mean, it seems like a long time, but it's not that bad because we're sitting there and just chatting, discussing the weekend, the wins, the losses, the what we hope to see the next time, you know, et cetera.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I only got to meet Todd at Joe Fest, and I only met him like really briefly. He bought the couple of box sets off me. And he's a fucking dead sound guy. So it'd be cool to meet him again.
He is a burst of energy. You know, he and I are kind of similar in that way. But since, you know, the podcast is more Joel and my domain, and Destro's Toy Den is more his domain, he is a bit more stuck at the booth than the rest of us are. We spend hours there helping out, and, you know, the more time we spend at the booth selling, the less we spend of our own money. But that's more his responsibility than the rest of us. Whereas this is Joel and my responsibility. Although, you know, at 9:30 in the morning, my time is 10:30 for him. He's dead at work.
Okay.
I mean, I guess so am I, but...
I mean, that's something we have in common. I mean, even though it's office hours here, I mean, I work for myself, so I just kind of, you know, if I want to jump on a call, I can jump on the call. It's no problem.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, he's employed by a company, so he's at their beck and call, you know?
I don't work for myself. However, if I want to take a break for an hour and do this, that's easy to just, I'll just write my scripts at 5 o'clock instead of, or at midnight, right? My job doesn't require another person most of the time.
Okay.
There is a bit of flexibility in like, just get it done, which I enjoy. Which I mean, is the same thing you're doing, except for I at least have somebody else breathing on my neck, or you have to breathe on your own neck. So that's that's a level of discipline I don't know that I have.
There's a good word for this, institutionalized into that kind of work ethic. So it's just, I don't know any other kind of lifestyle. In fact, I'm taking some time off next week. I may have said to you that I'm going away for a few days with the family.
Yeah.
That's more challenging for me than showing up and doing the work. If work is so institutionalized, it's actually easy for me to work. Whereas taking that time out to be with the family, which is so important and I totally need it, I find I have to really pull myself away from the desk. And I know I'm going to have a great time when I'm there, but I just need to, this weekend I'll be doing a big mind adjustment and getting ready for a different vibe for the next few days. You know?
I used to be a little bit more like that. And then when A was born, his mom and I had a conversation when he's in the yard playing on a Saturday and I'm logged in and building a report. And it shifted me pretty hard where it's like, you know, I can work at midnight. This kid sleeps at that point. So I can adjust to accommodate better than I can miss out on the time.
That is great, man. That is brilliant.
I don't know about your day-to-day tasks, if those can be done late at night, but you know, for me they can. And so, I go to sleep late and I wake up early. So I have the flexibility to prioritize that hangout.
That's brilliant. That's what I was like with my work from home. And I'm really grateful that I've worked from home almost the entire time that we've had kids. So what I find out as they're getting older, they don't really want a whole lot of kind of play time with me. It's more, I need a lift somewhere. Can you give me a lift?
For me, I've worked from home for most of his life, but not all of it.
That's amazing. But you know, for me, it was, and we're not even talking G.I. Joe or Action Force here, which I love. I own my own business, and I sold my shares because I was partnered with two other guys, and I sold my shares back to the company, and I quit at the end of 2019. You know, by that was October 2019, I'd quit, and by coming into say December, January, I was really getting the itchy feet to kind of get back to work. And and everybody was saying to me, take the time out. You've earned it. Just take the time out. But then, you know, by the end of that year, they relaxed kind of things here a bit in Ireland. And at that stage, I did get back into, I moved into the museum stuff. I was doing the museum design. And then I packed that in last November to do these books full time. So there you go. There's my career history right there.
That's amazing. I don't know that I have the entrepreneurial spirit. I'm always in awe of it, especially if you, obviously, you know, to be able to move a portion off and take time to work on a personal project, that is fantastic. You know, we've talked to Brian about when he did that with his business. Now you're saying this. I know Carson has done some of that. It's kind of crazy, you guys that have been running your own thing at a high level that could step away for personal projects.
You know, I don't pause enough to think about how brilliant it is, but it actually is brilliant.
Yeah.
There are days as well now when I do be thinking, how the fuck am I going to pay the bills next month? You still have those moments, but
sure.
But thankfully, I have been able to pay the bills, and that's pretty cool.
I mean, that's the push and pull of it, right? Like, if you don't work, you don't get paid. I guess that's the same for me. It's just that the risk is on the corporation's shoulders.
Yeah.
And the paycheck is
guaranteed.
Yeah.
I'm pretty convinced that I think once our generation is kind of gone, there's going to be a lot of Action Force and G.I. Joe and Star Wars product on the market.
When we're all gone, who cares? Although I got to say, like with Classified and with Skybound, I'm really hoping there is a resurgence. Both are selling mad numbers and introducing the brand to a generation that does not give a fuck.
That is actually really encouraging. Because like those...
It's the hope.
I'm not collecting Classified myself. Exception of a couple of little bits and pieces here and there that I like the look of. But I know my mate Steven's collecting it. Bill here in Ireland, he's collecting it. They're loving it. I was looking at the Vamp. I was over in Bill's yesterday. And the Vamp, holy shit, dude. Like, it's seeing it in person, it blew my mind. And in fact, that would be a piece that I would kind of want to add to my kind of collectible list.
The Vamp and the Hiss Tank are both such statement pieces that you could put a Hiss Tank in the middle of a toy room and have nothing else classified, or a vamp, and it makes a statement. It is a showpiece in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
I mean, both of those things are just wildly gorgeous, and I'm naturally assuming that both the Dragonfly and now the Rattler will be the same, or the Stinger when they come out with that, or when they ship that, they've already come out with it. But yeah, that vamp is beautiful. And, you know, if you miss the vamp and you don't want to pay that aftermarket, jump on BBTS and grab a Stinger.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Sure, it's the same vehicle, basically, with a few different bits and pieces.
Yep, different colors. It's even easier to turn a Stinger into a Panther than it is to turn a vamp.
Yes, it's halfway there.
Right.
I did see some of those Gridiron Studios. Bill sent me photos this morning. Gridiron Studios accessories for the vamp. Whoa, talk about like pimp your vamp. Like, it's unbelievable.
It's a whole other vehicle once you gridiron it out. They were supposed to be at Joe Fest, and so I had actually been trying to set some money aside for just them at Joe Fest, and then they canceled. And so that money went into buying extra Delta 17s.
Money well spent.
Oh, those things are amazing.
My only regret is that I didn't buy more.
Yes.
I just kind of dipped my toe. I grabbed three figures, and I opened them only last week, and they are brilliant. And immediately went, why didn't I get a whole load more of them while I was there?
Yeah, they're very good. I like them a lot. I think Alexander bought six.
Okay.
We are absolutely planning on buying more.
Excellent.
There's no reason not to. We very much enjoy those figures.
But you know what? I know Ken Poe. So he's got his own YouTube channel, his Toy Connections, with a vintage toy focus. I don't know if you know Ken's channel, but we were chatting at Joe Fest, you know, catching up, and in fact, I'm due to be speaking with him in a couple of weeks as we kind of wrap up the pre-order bundle deal. I'm gonna let him know how impressed I was with the Delta. I don't know what his role is, but he's involved with the crew somehow. So I'll be letting him know. I'm super, super impressed.
Yeah, I noticed that he and I have a lot of mutual friends, but we had only met like once or twice. And so we got to, you know, have a little bit of FaceTime at Joe Fest, but everybody was drinking and having a good time. And
yeah.
Speaking of, you used the term itchy feet, which is also a term that Bob Breakin used. And that is not an American term. And I love that term. I very much love that term.
Yeah, it's a great, great expression. Yeah.
You know, we've talked about everything except for the thing that you needed to talk about.
But this is, do you know what? This is a great conversation. But I am actually, it's 20 past four here.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to rock out of here in about 20 minutes.
Perfect. Quick question. When does this end?
The pre-order will keep going right up until we have physical stock in the shop. But the special deal on the pre-order will end. So that's the deal of three books for the price of two.
Correct.
That's going to end on August 17th. Midnight Pacific time.
Midnight Pacific time.
Yeah, so anyone on the west coast of the U.S. will still be able to avail of that up until midnight on the 17th.
Do you guys have a launch time, or is it just however long it takes to print?
Well, we're going to print. So here's the kind of the high-level schedule. We're going to print in September. We'll have physical books in December.
So pre-order will go all the way till December, or go all the way to September?
Oh, it'll go all the way till we actually have the books in hand.
So pre-order will be alive until December. The special will be alive until the 17th, end of the 17th. I know Rebellion has worked through Diamond and everything in comic shops. Will this end up in Diamond? Will you be able to order this through the comic shop? Or is this strictly a Total Books sort of situation?
Right now, the only way you can pre-order is through TotalToyBooks.com. That's the only way you can pre-order. And we are looking at the Diamond option.
But it's not solidified.
It's not. If we sell out our product before we have, you know, with pre-orders, which could happen,
sure,
then there won't be anything in Diamond. Or, you know, we won't have any stock left for Diamond to purchase. It's not ruled out.
But it's not guaranteed.
Not guaranteed. So that's the type of thing where maybe near the time of having physical stock in hand, at that point we could start to talk about more solidly about options at retail outside of our website.
The thing I like about that is that this gives us a real sense of urgency on how and when to order.
Yes.
So then what we just talked about can be the opener for our 20 minutes.
Brilliant.
And then we can talk right up until you need to go. And then I'll see whatever our previous conversation fits.
Excellent. Happy days.
To jump back into it. So you guys announced this at Joe Fest, and you guys brought dummy books with you to Joe Fest so that people could see, like, this Treasury edition is a nice oversized, what is it, like 9x12 or something like that. It's an oversized book. It's nice and thick. It's nice and heavy. I was really kind of upset with you guys because I immediately flipped it open, and because it's a dummy, it was all white pages. So it hurt my feelings. I make the joke that it was disappointing, but, you know, it's a dummy book. Those are what it's there for. It was nice and hefty. I loved seeing the covers. We obviously picked up the bookmarks and everything else you guys brought. And you guys also brought all of your older books.
We did.
Which I think you guys sold out completely, right?
Everything that we brought with us for sale, we sold it at Joe Fest, which was amazing. And incidentally, Bob Breakin also had books at the Skeletron stand, and they all sold out too. So we were really, really pleased with how that all went down. That was amazing.
Well, for anybody that didn't catch any of the other Total Toy books, they're all incredible. I've read all of them. And I know you guys have another one in the works right now.
Yeah, no, more news as it's made. So that was funded or crowdfunded through Kickstarter earlier this year. That's David Gillis is an Action Force photographer in the UK, well known for his kind of photos of the vintage Action Force toys. His book, More News As It's Made, is kind of designed by myself. It's been published by Total Toy Books. That's up for pre-order on the TotalToyBooks.com website as well. And David's book, actually, here's an exclusive now. It just went to print today.
Excellent.
I haven't even had a chance to put an update out to the backers just yet to let them know that. But today, earlier this morning, it went to print. So that's going to go through that process now of kind of getting proofs back from the printer for review and for approval. And once they're signed off, it'll hit the presses. So we would expect to have books by October, which is lines up with our timeline on Kickstarter. So David's book will be going to backers in October.
You really don't like to let the grass grow. So you went to print today. Your special deal on the pre-order ends on the 17th. That pre-order is going to end in September, right before you're expecting to have David's books. And then just a couple months later, you're going to have these Action Force books. I mean, when do you have time to eat or sleep?
I never eat or sleep. I'm totally institutionalized. It's been a really busy this year and last year too have been really busy years for Total Toy Books in a good way. There's a lot going on with there was Total Action Force Volume 2, followed up by My Palatoy Story. Then we're working on the Total Robo School book, you know, in the middle of all this. Again, that's going to be coming out, again, later in the year. You know, once I get these Action Force Treasury editions off the print, I'll be able to kind of talk a little bit more about Total Robo Skull and start building a bit more hype for that. But the focus right now is on these Treasury editions, which for anyone who's not maybe that familiar with them, these are the books that collect the Action Force stories from Battle Action Force that were published from the summer of 1983 right through to the end of 1984. The Baron Ironblood period of Battle Action Force.
This happens before Baron Ironblood becomes Cobra Commander.
Correct, yes.
These were newspaper-sized comics that any given issue would be three or four short stories. So there would be a bunch of, I'm failing on the names right now, but there would be some like World War II and some other war comic, like three or four pages for this story. And then in the middle of those, you would get a three-page Action Force, and then you'd go back to, you know, where it's more of a dogfighting World War II, and then you jump back into this. And so what you guys have done, and these came out weekly.
Yes.
That's a couple hundred issues. And you guys went through all of these and pulled out the Action Force stories, organized them in as chronological as you can, scanned them in, cleaned them up so that the artwork in these books are as close to perfect as you can legitimately get in today's day and age without the old rollers and prints. And now you're putting this out as a continuous story that we can sit down and read over three issues. Have I oversold it? Have I lied?
I think if you've nailed it pretty much there, there's very much a linear narrative in terms of how the stories are kind of collected.
Yeah.
So you have the emergence of Baron Noble and the Red Shadows, that first story arc. Then Action Force is a kind of a special forces unit put together by the United Nations to deal with that threat. And then it goes through the whole arc of them trying to hunt down Baron Ironblood, various kind of missions that kind of spin off from that, and then brings you up to events just before the story arc where Baron Ironblood becomes Cobra Commander. So it doesn't get into that Cobra era. In these particular volumes, this stays very much in the Red Shadows era, but it gives you that complete narrative from beginning to end. It doesn't include any of the, say, what we would call the character backstories, because they don't fit necessarily with the narrative. They're kind of separate stories that mightn't have anything to do with the Red Shadows or whatever. So they're not included, but the principal continuity, that's captured in those three volumes.
That's incredible. And I love this because for you guys, this was not G.I. Joe. This was something completely different. And then at a certain point, you guys had to sort of shoehorn G.I. Joe into this, which is where at the end of this, if you guys were to do a next volume, you could get into Ironblood becoming Cobra Commander. And then Red Jackal becomes Destro. This is where Flint is more of the Duke for you guys after this. So this is the setup. This is what, for those that may not be familiar with Action Force, SAS, Q Force, Z Force, the Red Shadows, and all of this, this is the learning. This is the training ground. And this is where you get to really sink your teeth into where the Roboskull comes from, the Sea Lion, the Triad Fighter, Skip, all of these very cool things that we get to learn about as an adult when we're going through Yo-Jo and we go to the international button or when we finish our 82 to 94 run and we realize why does Grunt have a red jacket and weird look to him, and we get to learn about Gaucho and the Panther is such a beautiful redo of the Vamp. This is where all of this is the seed of all of that for you guys, whereas Larry was the seed of it through Marvel for us.
Yes.
And the cool thing that a lot of comic book collectors may not know or may not have had access to because the newsprint is so hard to get over here, a lot of, like today, gods of writers and artists came from this point of Battle Action Force, came from the stories you're about to unleash upon us.
That is totally one of the things that I love about this project. That, I mean, we've got guys, Jerry Finley Day is the lead writer on these stories. Jerry's he's a legend in the British comic scene. And you mentioned Larry Hama there a moment ago. And Jerry is like, he's our Larry over in Britain and Ireland. He's he's ex-military. He brought all that experience, that military experience, to his storytelling. And it really shows in the stories that he penned. There were a couple of other writers that were important players too, but Jerry was very much the lead writer in the Action Force comics. And then, of course, we've got artists like Cam Kennedy. And if you've read Star Wars, Star Wars Dark Empire, all that artwork is Cam Kennedy. So we've got Cam Kennedy, he contributing to the Action Force comic universe as well, which is amazing when you think about it, how much of a superstar that guy is. And then the other artists, at the time Action Force came to Battle, when it was included in Battle, it was such a big deal because it was going to be half the comic now. They had to put some of their top guys on it. So a lot of the artists who worked on it would have been veterans. Cam was obviously a young guy. He still had like a whole career ahead of him. But there were guys like Jim Watson and John Cooper who were maybe coming to the end of their careers. But they were, again, an incredible body of work behind them. They'd worked across loads of different titles, and they could churn out awesome artwork every week, which was important for the publishers. These guys could hit the deadlines because they had to turn out maybe 5, 6, 7 pages of penciled and inked artwork every week.
That's insane. That is an incredible amount of work.
It's a huge work, but these guys were just, I mean, they were pros, and they could just knock it out. I love, you know, just talking briefly about John Cooper. John Cooper's landscapes are incredible. One panel, and there was one, I was cleaning it up there yesterday. It's just a simple waterfall shot. There's an SAS guy in his canoe or his kayak, and he's going over the edge of a waterfall. And just that one panel was brilliantly done. His eye for detail for landscapes was incredible. And then Jim Watson, and I've spoken about Jim on other kind of, you know, podcasts, his brushwork is very expressive. So he doesn't put a lot of detail necessarily into his panels, but his inking style is just creates the illusion of lots and lots of detail and is very, very dynamic. And again, he would be one of those kind of veteran artists that just, he knew what to do and he did an amazing job on it.
I'm always struck when I go back and I read older comics, it's always the comics that are a bit more war-centric that always seem to really dive deep into the backgrounds and the environments and looking at battle and battle action force. I mean, it is incredible what these guys were pulling off. And when you talk about every 5 to 7 days, that's even more mind-blowing because those panels are not... We learn about the shortcuts when we look into how to do comic books and how to make that kind of art because a 30-day schedule is intense. And now you're talking about cutting that in force. it's beautiful. I've enjoyed everything that I've read from that time period, whether it been, you know, looking at really poor scans online or picking up, you know, the old Battle Action Force annuals in hardback, which are amazing. And they also have all the other stories, not just the Our Action Force stuff. So as I've looked through all these things, I've always been really impressed by that older style of art and how clear and clean the black and white artwork is, how varied and individualized the faces are, which, you know, in today's comics is you can name any professional artist and talk about how they have a face or how they have three faces. And these guys were just incredible. And I know that Rebellion, who is one of your partners in this, they're the publishing arm. You've also partnered with Skeletron on this, but Rebellion, they have put out other Battle Action Force things. I think
that's right.
Like Innis and some others have done, yes, like a modern, if this was still going on today, what would it look like?
Yes.
Kind of trades. And so you can find those at your local comic shop or online. And these will fit with that really well because it's still a Rebellion book. And so the quality is there. And maybe I'm talking out of turn because I haven't flipped through yours, but I have held the dummy book. So I've seen the hardback and I've felt the heft of it. And I've opened it up and seen your inside stitching. And I have some of Rebellion's other stuff. So I'm pretty confident when I say that I expect and I assume the quality. Now, you've actually put your hands on these things, so you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I doubt you're going to.
But you know, I love that you gave that kind of comparison there with the modern battle action pieces that Rebellion have released. And I never really thought of it in those terms, but you're absolutely dead right. These will sit perfectly in with those modern releases. We talked a bit about the binding there. There are some pages where the artwork goes across the spread. So I spec'd up a lay-flat binding solution with a printer so that we're not losing artwork in the gutter.
That's beautiful because that is such an important part of binding.
Yes.
That no one notices until it doesn't work right.
Yeah, and when it doesn't work right, you know. So that was a really important thing for me to make sure we had that lay-flat option. The paper as well that's been specced, it's a really high grade paper, high quality paper, and it has an uncoated finish. It's because I wanted the artwork to be reproduced in a format that was as close to the original as possible. So the newsprint, which is not very good quality paper, it does give a certain aesthetic, which is that kind of uncoated matte kind of feel. So I wanted to make sure we brought that kind of aesthetic quality over, but also maintain kind of longevity to the paper. So, you know, a paper quality that is comparable to any kind of modern book that you would get.
I like that you talk about this, because these are invisible things that people only notice if they're wrong. And by you kind of laying out the decision and why and what's going into it is a good reminder to all of us of when we're reading through these books, especially a lot of, you know, the IDW or the Marvel or whatever, the soft cover trades that reprinted off of reprints, and, you know, the center bends in and you got to try to finagle the book without breaking the spine so that you can read. You know, so to bring all that in, I do feel like these are invisible unless they're wrong. And so I'm glad you're giving voice to them, because they're things that I look for and I want in a book. And so when I say thank you, I'm not being disingenuous. Like, this is not hyperbole. I am very excited by what you're laying out in these considerations and improvements to the pages and the binding, because it means so, so much.
These are a labor of love for me. So I want to do these books. Like, what would I want from a book? That's the benchmark that I'm setting for myself. And so all those kind of different print finishes are super important to me. And then just generally that the artwork is restored to as good a level as is feasibly possible with the source material that I'm working from. So it's painstakingly cleaning up every single panel, every speech bubble. I mean, it's like thousands of panels, thousands of speech bubbles. You know, it comes together to create like over 800 pages of beautiful comic content. And then there's all the design of the non-comic pages, of the editorial pages that are included at the beginning of each book. We've got an introduction written by Jerry Finley Day, another introduction written by James Tomlinson, who was another important writer for the strip, and then co-author for the Battle Action Force, or the Total Action Force books, David MacDonald, has put together a three-part history of British comics, which for people who are maybe coming to this, they're not familiar with these, say, the British comics format, this will quickly bring you up to speed and put a bit of context on what you're about to read. So that's serialized in three parts and will include part one in volume one, part two in volume two, etc. And that's a lovely little piece that he's written. And all of those introductions, they're all going to be illustrated with comic artwork as well. So, you know, and then in addition to all of that, if all of that wasn't enough, the character data profiles, which were printed in the comics. Because remember, we didn't get file cards per se with the action figure card backs. There was a small few sentences of text, but it wasn't a file card. But they got their, we'll say, you know, the American term is file cards, right? But it was data files for us. They got a full page in the comic for all of your characters. So they're going to be reproduced as well.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You get the stories, but then you get to find out who these characters are. So Sky Raider, Eagle, Stakeout, Quickfire, Mouton, the Kraken, all their data files are included in the comics as well, or in these editions as well. So for if you're new to kind of the vintage Action Force or Palatoy Action Force, this is going to be, you know, another great reason to get on board and get your hands on these books.
And this is coming out right at the same time that we're going to be getting Quarrel in hand at the classified line.
Yes!
There's a lot to love here. There's a lot to learn. And I really enjoy, and maybe not everybody, but I really enjoy as a collector and as a lifelong G.I. Joe guy, being able to bring in and wrap in what was non-domestic for me. And yes, there's a bit of privilege being from the U.S. and having the enormity of G.I. Joe that we had here. And genuinely, I could probably go an entire lifetime of G.I. Joe without ever stepping outside of the U.S. borders. damn, that seems boring. and being able to explore the toy lines from outside of my home and outside of my own personal experience has been a lot of fun. But then for you guys, the comics were such, like for us, a big part of it.
Oh yeah.
That this is really, I mean, this is very special because it is a blending of the broader world of G.I. Joe. You know, we as Americans didn't get to see G.I. Joe as an international task force until the movies. But you guys have always had it. I mean, you just said it right there. Like, this Action Force was an international task force. And when Action Force becomes G.I. Joe for you guys, it's already there. It's already ingrained. It's already embedded.
Yeah.
And we had to learn about it in the 2000s. So
we didn't have the TV show in the 1980s. All we had was the comic.
Yeah.
And so that comic, that was our kind of Action Force world. The Action Force continuity was completely wrapped up in that comic. So look, there's no doubt that on the G.I. Joe side of it, there's been amazing stories told, beautiful comics created. And it's great that they're there, that you can get them, that Skybound are bringing them back out.
Right.
But if anyone's kind of curious about that sort of other world, and it's a completely separate universe, the Action Force universe, there's any, you know, these Treasury editions are a great place to explore that curiosity, meet these new characters, see characters that maybe look like characters that you're already familiar with, but are completely different in terms of their backgrounds, their motivations, and even their allegiances. So I'm excited about it. I can't wait to get these books in hand. And I'm really, really looking forward to kind of sharing these with everybody else once these come out later this year.
Yeah. And I'm not curious about it. I'm hungry for it. So I've already moved beyond curious. But one of the things that I really like about you guys doing this is that, like, for you, for example, your generation wasn't the combination of Action Force and G.I. Joe. It was Action Force. And you get to bring that to us who see them as very intertwined. And we get to see what it looked like before it was intertwined for you, before it was such a mix mash. Whereas for us, you know, coming from G.I. Joe to Action Force, we're starting with how they combined and having to learn our way backward. So I appreciate that this is focused on before it was intertwined, when it was still separate, when it was its own thing. You know, if you read my Palitoy story, Bob talks about how Toy Fair 1982 over there, and I don't remember the name of your guys' toy fair, but it happened a month before the New York Toy Fair here in America.
Yeah.
So technically, Action Force, which was built independently of G.I. Joe, is a month older. And so, you know, and then I know when we talked with Bob, you know, we might have taken a step into why Action Force figures are better than G.I. Joe figures. We even gave you a good 30-second run at telling us all about it. But this is just another thing of, like, Action Force to me is deeply intertwined with G.I. Joe because that's how I came at it. I've known G.I. Joe since I was 7, and I learned about Action Force when I was in my 30s. And so I can't help but intertwine them, but they're not at 82. And so you get to show us a pure version of Action Force that then gets to be intertwined later on. And I love that, and I'm hungry for it. And yeah, maybe other people aren't quite as hungry as I am, but if they're curious at all, my enthusiasm is not at all faked here. I am wildly excited. When you guys launched this at Joe Fest, my first question was, how long does this pre-order go? And you were like, well, we're going to be going for a while. I was like, good, 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 good. And then I ordered. I was ordering without the special deal. And so the special deal is, it's 3 books. You get basically 3 for $2.
That's it.
Who doesn't like 1/3 off, right? Like, that's 33%. That's a hell of a deal. You know, that's more than tax if you're looking at US prices. And with Skeletron being involved, shipping isn't going to be too insane, but these are 3 heavy books. So it's not going to be cheap to ship, but it's everything I've seen from your guys' prototype books at Joe Fest, from the photos you guys have shared online through Total Toy Books, through everything that you've talked to, not just me at Joe Fest or before, not just here today, but when you talk to Chris and when you've talked to everyone else that you've talked to, whether YouTube or podcasting, it all looks fantastic. And I would pay full price for these. So the fact that between now and the 17th of August, midnight on Pacific Coast time,
yes,
which is 9 hours behind you in Dublin, I can't fathom how good of a deal this is, because I would pay full price for this. If you miss out on this, then you have to hope that you guys still have enough stock for Diamond to be interested so that you can get it through your local comic shop. So instead of doing that wait and pray, as we've seen from Total Action Force Volume 1 and Total Action Force Volume 2 and My Palette Toy Story, all selling out, even though this is with Rebellion, these are not going to be something you can buy for the next 5-6 years. Get them now.
These are limited edition books. The license is for something very exclusive in terms of, you know, quality and print run. So it, you know, it's not like a mass-produced trade paperback.
Right.
It's, you know, the print run is on a much smaller scale. And of course, the quality then, like these are collectible books, so hence the hardback, coffee table size, you know, they're oversized. The three books together weigh about 15 pounds. But, you know, you mentioned shipping there earlier. With Skeletron doing the shipping for North America, it means we can ship within North America for, it's around $30. That's all three books combined.
That's fantastic, because that would be close to 75 if you were shipping them from Ireland.
Oh, I mean, it could be nearly 100 if we were shipping it from here. So it's a huge saving, you know, that people in the US can avail of. And then, of course, if you want to buy only one book, obviously, then the shipping is, you know, it's going to be lower to reflect that it's only one book.
I think it would be insane. Like, what kind of madman would you be if you were only just buying one volume and moving on?
Well, if you're only getting one third of the story at that stage, so...
That's right. That's right.
You'd be missing out, you know?
Then again, that's what pre-orders are for. You know, if I'm broke today, I order one, and then in a couple months, I order the second, and then I order the third.
Yes.
But in doing that, I'm going to miss out on the deal, which is 3 for 2. I find it funny that every time we chat, I end up just kind of school child gushing and crushing over whatever you or you and Patty or you and one of the Davids is doing, or you and Bob. And so I appreciate that you kindly let me do that. but moreover, like you've talked to a few people, you've been on a few podcasts and a few YouTubes talking about this. It's important to get out. You got to talk to everybody. And so if people are interested in hearing more, it's kind of fun to listen to you and Chris talk, because Chris grew up with the same comics you did. Yes. So you guys can talk about it at a different level than my dumbass hoping to read them soon. I would always recommend, anytime you or Patty are doing anything in our community, to jump on and take a listen or take a watch. And then with this, I don't know. I don't know anybody, and that's it. No one in my close circle is disinterested. So I'm hoping whoever's hearing this that's not already interested, they can be such. Everyone I know that has seen it, has held the dummy book, we're all in.
That's brilliant. That is great. And the books got great feedback from people who saw them at Joe Fest. That was one of the things I loved about Joe Fest, was getting, you know, to talk Action Force, to talk about these comics, and, you know, to see the enthusiasm from folks, you know, so complimentary of the art, so complimentary of the cover designs, and, you know, all those lovely print finishes that we spoke about. It was great feedback. So that encourages me to say, I know I'm on the right path here. This is going to be a beautiful product, and I can't wait to share it.
As a comparison, and I know you have a time limit, so I want to be kind of quick about it, but as a comparison, if you're talking about 50-ish issues of the newsprint per year, it's been a number of years that I saw like a full, like 1982 complete run, and that went for over $200 or $300 and then a complete year of 83, you know? And at Joe Fest, a run of several years went for a few $100s, all in newsprint, all falling apart, not archivable. How much are these books?
So I'll break down kind of the pricing here, and I'm just going to pull it up just so that I'm not kind of guessing or doing kind of estimates here at the moment. If you're going to buy the 3-for-2 bundle deal, well, that works out as in US dollars per book, it's $53 per volume. Let's put a bit of, you know, kind of shape in that. We're talking about each volume has got over 270 pages. These are, the dimensions are 320 by 270 millimeters. Now, I don't know what that converts to in inches, but it's a lot bigger than your typical comic book format. As I say, the weight of them, so the weight is about, it's probably about 4 pounds, just over four and a half pounds per book, roughly. So the packed weight is about 15 pounds when they're packed and ready to go. So that's what you're getting for the 3-for-2 bundle deal. If you miss that, you can still pre-order after August 17th, but the regular retail price is going to be around $80 per book. Well, I'm converting that in my head from euros, but they're not far off those estimates.
So that is, I mean, again, I'd pay the 80 each. It's beautiful, and what it is very exciting. And the fact that they've been scanned and cleaned, and this archivist approach to bringing these back to us, which is a better quality than we're probably going to get with Skybound's redo of the A-Raw run, because they're printing off of prints. It's worth it. And then to do it for 53 a piece is even better.
That is a great deal, man, right now. And that's the best deal. That's the best price anyone's ever going to get those books for. So I'd be encouraging people, you know, you've got 2 weeks as the time of this recording, you know, to get in there and get the pre-order. You know, hit up totaltoybooks.com from the homepage. It'll take you straight in, get the early bird bundle deal. And as I say, I can't wait to start shipping these out to people in December and sharing what I know is going to be a beautiful, beautiful product.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.